And on ABC Radio National, this is Artworks. I'm Amanda Smith, taking you off to Italy, to Florence, for this week's feature. Florence is a city famous for its art, but also its artisans. You can see their skill and craft everywhere. But with each year, the number of working craftspeople is getting fewer and fewer. It's one of those paradoxes. The people who make a city worth visiting are the ones who end up getting squeezed out. For Artworks, Jean De Marino is in Florence.
In a small bottega on Via dei Velluti in Florence, a master craftsman plies a trade handed down to him over many generations.
We don't see the first color because it's light blue. But maybe you can see a little better this.
Enrico Giannini is a bookbinder or rilegatore, and he's making what's known as marbled paper that he'll use to cover a book. The technique he's using is centuries old.
I cannot stop right now.
Wearing a blue lab coat, he stands over a basin filled with a substance that looks like glue, but is in fact made out of seaweed from Ireland.
It's a very good quality. They eat and they send me in a plastic bag with a recipe to eat. I never taste it. I prefer spaghetti.
Everything stills as he carefully spatters paint drops on the gelatinous base, one colour after another. Soon a pattern forms. Using a porcupine quill as a tool, he pecks here and there in the basin, creating an even more intricate composition.
I'm going to put the paper here on top, and the paper must absorb the colour immediately, you know.
Molto bello.
Marbled paper with its swirling, veined patterns is a classic in Italy, adorning diaries and albums in souvenir shops across the country.
Those are a little brighter, but...
Enrico Giannini says he brought the technique back to life decades ago after it had almost disappeared off a trend.
All the binders started to do the same, not only in Florence, but all over Italy, including Venice. So Venetians started to say Marco Polo brought the paper here, and we started to do that. Really, the process is very old, was born in Orient.
Enrico Giannini is the fifth generation of a venerable family of bookbinders in Florence.
My great-great-grandfather started in 1856 with a small stationery store and a small workshop.
That business still stands in front of the Pitti Palace, where it has done for more than 150 years, always in family hands. Enrico's great-grandfather learnt the art of tooling, or embossing covers in gold leaf there, from the bookbinder to the Italian king. Later, Giannini's recreated styles from the 1300s on. Their books bound in vellum and parchment and decorated with intricate designs sold around the world. Their clients boasted popes and royalty.
We made a photo album for the Queen Victoria when she came in Tuscany, and all the English residents wanted to offer her a present.
But time may be running out for the master bookbinder. The world has changed in the more than 50 years he's practiced his craft. The artisans of Florence are vanishing from a city where once there were thousands. It's a far cry from their medieval heyday. In a mostly feudal world, where life depended on favours from royalty and the church, Florence was different. It was a republic with a government run indirectly by its citizens. Artisans were drawn here from all over Italy and around the world. Forming themselves into corporazioni, or trade guilds, they created a city that hummed with productivity. Life pulsed in their botteghe, which spilled onto the streets. Visitors had to weave their way through the benches they set up outside to catch as much light and air as they could while they worked. They traded gossip, advice, and insults as they showed off their wares. There was no shortage of clients for the craftsmen. The guild leaders commissioned new headquarters and statues for their church, Merchant families like the De Medici, made rich from banking and international trade, financed cathedrals and convents. A network of bottega developed in which a number of grand masters were trained. Artists like Brunelleschi and Donatello were first apprenticed to goldsmiths. But today in Florence, little of that network remains. In the past few decades alone, the artisans have fled the city centre in droves. The few who remain are found mostly in the Oltrarno, the other side of the Arno. Not for them the golden triangle in the river's north, with its Duomo, Uffizi Gallery and luxurious fashion emporia. Instead, the south of the Arno is their stamping ground, the suburbs of Santo Spirito and San Frediano. Home to the silk workers in medieval times, the area has remained working class for centuries. A short walk down Via dei Velluti is the workshop of master woodcarver and antique furniture restorer Luigi Macocci. He's chiselling an intricate leaf design on a wooden sconce that will go on a wall as a candelabra.
When you reconstruct the body of a work of art and breathe life and soul into it again, for a working artisan it can't get any better. It's just the best.
By his workbench is a life-size Madonna carrying the infant Jesus. Hundreds of years old, she's missing hands and her colours have worn away. Macocci has been painstakingly restoring her for more than 30 years.
This here is a beautiful object. Everyone who comes here asks me, when will it be finished? Because they want it.
Luigi Macocci has worked in the Oltrarno for 53 years. Most of that time he's spent in this same bottega, a treasure trove of legless cherubs and speckled mirrors. And although it's been a struggle to make ends meet, the restorer, or restauratore, says his colleagues in the area have made it worthwhile.
It was a lot of fun. We even used to host lunches here in the middle of the street and invite all our friends and colleagues. We invited the police as well because otherwise they wouldn't let us do it. The artisans were made like that.
But it's been a long time since the master craftsman has organized one of his lunches.
At first there were 15 or 16 of us restorers in this area. Now there are just three, including me. They've made this all into houses. It has transformed Florence. It's becoming really ugly for me because there used to be all these workshops before where people could linger and watch. Instead now it's totally changed.
As Luigi Macocci says, the Oltrarno rings with the sound of hammers and pneumatic drills. In each street, it seems, there are building works going on as Florentines convert cramped working-class property into pricey real estate. A small one-bedroom studio sells for more than $400,000 US. That same space nets a landlord close to $1,500 a month in rent. In summer, it earns him the same each week. And with millions of tourists and students staying in Florence each year, the demand for accommodation is high. An artisan simply can't compete. Bronze workers Luciano and Guido Ugolini are lucky. The Bronzisti own their bottega. They inherited it from their father. Today, they're hard at work finishing a consignment of vases. Not just any old urns, these are reproductions of antiques and are destined for the houses of the well-to-do. Luciano says each takes at least 1 month to make.
It's all done by hammer. The working, the folding, the bases are all beaten by hand. It's a lot of work, but why do we still notice the old works of art? Because the old masters sat down and calmly worked at them. The client didn't need them urgently. The artist sat there and slowly, slowly created beautiful objects.
Quegli oggetti bellissimi.
The Ugolini family has plied its trade near Piazza Santo Spirito for more than a century. Luciano and Guido have seen the artisan's way of life change greatly just in the past dozen years.
Things were made and commented upon. It was an important moment, constructive, not destructive, because the work was being critiqued by fellow artisans. Four eyes saw more than two, and six eyes even better. Today, everything has to be decided in a hurry.
The Bronzisti say it's not just the rents that have chased their neighbours away. A decision by City Hall 30 years ago to close the centre off to private vehicles with parking restrictions and permit requirements has also come to roost. Guido says it makes large deliveries of raw materials or shipments of finished goods impractical and expensive. It puts off potential clients as well.
You just can't work here anymore. You can't enter the city in a car without a permit. A large truck can't make its way through the small streets. Before, there were smaller trucks which carried things you'd bought or sold even two times a day. Today, with all the traffic and the need for permits, they don't come here anymore.
But it's more than the parking restrictions and landlord's greed that are making it hard for these craftsmen to survive. The world outside has also dealt them some tough blows. Luigi Macocci now does the majority of his work for the state, restoring statues and works of art for one of the public museums in Florence. He says if it weren't for that one client, he'd be in difficulty.
It's been 3 years since I've seen the biggest antique dealer here in Florence, Bartarozzi, come to this workshop and bring me work. Before, I did two or three pieces for him a year. Very, very important pieces. And now I don't see him anymore.
The master restorer says the economic crisis has taken its toll on the artisans, affecting both local and international markets for the Florentine goods.
It's a chain reaction. Those who don't sell aren't buying.
But it seems a more enduring problem may be that we no longer have the taste or the time for beauty. Few today think of purchasing furniture and ornaments for life. Goods are cheap to buy, they last a minute and are easy to throw away. It's the cost that's king.
It's not easy to understand that to buy a book you need 4 or 5 days. So when you ask a price for that, they say, oh, you're crazy. It's cheaper to buy a new one than to rebind the old one.
But a tiny few artisans are managing to survive, even thrive. Due passi, or a few steps away from Enrico Giannini's bookbindery, Aldo Santini is hard at work. The tones from his Bottega reveal his vocation. Aldo is a luthaio. He makes and restores violins, violas and cellos.
A violin is a sculpture and a paint, so if you cover with something that you buy in the shop, you are covering something that was very well done, with very nice materials, with very nice colors, and with techniques that we are not able to redo. So preserving the varnish is very important, and preserving the old wood is very important, because it's in the old wood that there is something that we don't know how it was made.
Inside Aldo's workshop, anxious musicians put their instruments through their paces. They hover as he makes minute adjustments to a bow or bridge.
Restoring an old instrument, then, if the work is well done, you bring it to new life completely. They are exactly as they were. So the purpose is to make the job exactly as it was, searching, respecting, and not changing what it was.
And it seems he's well paid for his time. A restored violin, depending on its maker and state of repair, can fetch from a few thousand to hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Normally, old violins, I mean instruments from 18th or 17th century, they are quite better if they are in good conditions. I cannot say twice or 10 times more because it's so big the difference, but it's very subtle. So it's better to have an old instrument.
Many of your fellow artisans around here have closed. How difficult is it to survive as an artisan in Florence at the moment?
I think that is a problem being anything. You can be architect, you can be engineer or artisan. It's always the same because people that needs your job is not a lot. And you have to be the best and you have to offer a good product.
And what's your reaction to comments that nowadays we're so used to buying new things and cheaply that it makes it difficult for the artisans to continue?
Yes, of course, market works in that way. If you can find something cheaper than something else, you are going to buy it if it is what you need.
Is it affecting you?
It starts affecting people that is surviving making and selling new instruments. But it depends on the level. For example, violins around 4,000 euros start being very difficult to sell because you can find something in that level at 300 euros, made in China.
But the Lutayo says he's not competing in that market. He's successfully carving out a niche for himself in a different field, overseas.
My clients are most of all dealers from London. The centre of the market in the world for violins is London. There are a lot of auctions and a lot of people make business in the hotels around the auction places. So that's the reason why the best instruments, the very expensive instruments from 100,000 euros up are in London.
But around him in the Oltrarno, there's a growing number of shop fronts left barred and disused as others less fortunate in their choice of trade give up the struggle and close their doors. The concern is if something doesn't happen soon to prevent it, their skills will be lost.
The Italian unions have committed the crime. They have destroyed the apprenticeship system. Who passes on the know-how if there are no more apprentices?
Historian Sergio Bertelli says it doesn't help that the apprenticeship system is dying out. He blames its demise on labour laws, making it compulsory to pay a trainee a wage and benefits.
A young person comes into a bottega to learn. Is not productive for the proprietor. He can't give him a big wage. It's the proprietor who has to earn money.
The system that endured for centuries wasn't that way at all.
His father signed a contract with an artist saying, I'm sending you my son. The son was given board and lodging and learned the trade, but nothing more. At most, he received a little packed money.
Bookbinder Enrico Giannini gave up school to work as an apprentice in his father's bottega. He began by cleaning the benches and preparing the tools. More than 50 years later, he himself has decided not to take on an apprentice.
I don't know if I can push them to do this kind of work. It depends. If they love, but if they think they can make money doing this kind of work, it's not the way.
The artisans have been the mainstay of the Oltrarno community for centuries. They relied on each other for companionship as well as their expertise. Their business attracted others to the area who were dependent on their custom. Now, as more and more doors close, there are fewer reasons for the other residents to remain.
My father was saying the artisans are like a chain. If you lose one piece, it's broken. And it can work.
Enrico Giannini says it's now difficult to find tools, especially those used for the gold embossing. The stores where he once bought the pigments for his paint in small quantities have closed. And although he won't admit it, he too may be one of the links of the chain to break.
Because every year we lose something, and when an artisan closes, we lose a lot of our culture because nobody can replace it. All the experience.
It's 7 p.m. at the Bottega, and Enrico Giannini is still working. On his wooden bench lie his latest creations. There's a jewellery box clad in shimmering blue shark skin. Nearby is a book on Tuscany covered in a leather mosaic. Each piece is unique, the designs are his own. The finished items are the product of hours of painstaking labour. But the beauty and originality of his work may not be enough to ensure he stays afloat.
Nobody wants now. They don't need the sets. they don't need photo album. There is a digital camera. You can have put everything in your computer, and that's all. So a lot of things are changing.
But the air of five generations of entrepreneurs is made of strong stuff.
This is leather.
He's embossing the spine of what looks like a slim book.
Fantastic, that's amazing.
It looks as a book, but it says...
When he opens it to show me, he's delighted by my surprise.
I told you I must invent something.
In fact, it's a DVD container that could fit comfortably in a bookcase with other august tomes.
This is the prototype, just made. And now I'm making more. I already made all the covers.
It's covered in leather, fronted with his distinctive marbled paper.
This is the part of my work which I like, to surprise the customers with something. I love my work also for that, because me too, when I arrive at the end of the work, I say, oh, I'm proud of it. I love it.
Is this the first time they're being sold?
No, I sold one. But of course, I started doing a minimum quantity just to not have to spend a lot of time measuring all the pieces. So I prepare 10 of them.
Like the artisans through the centuries, Enrico Giannini is using the skills he's learnt over a lifetime, handed down to him over generations, to find new markets in a changing world. He hopes this and other products he's working on will help him survive in the computer age.
It's different to read on the computer and to have in your hand a book with a good printing, nice shape. So, I hope. Maybe at the end people will be tired to have everything virtual and they will be back. I hope so.
As I leave, Enrico Giannini urges me to return. But when the recording gear is switched off, he tells me not to leave it too long, or he may no longer be there.